Badger by Owl Light.
I salute the number of people I've been. All my dead selves in the graves they never had. Long gone, and no laments for the flowers that never knew a forest. The car quiet, the radio silenced, dead the colonial sound of the black man's music transmuted to white noise. Beyond the headlights, a vast black hole, rehearsing the day when it would finally swallow up everything. Round a slow corner, and there, explosive, coned in the lights, the number one growth industry of the 20th century. Violence.
Hold it right there.
This is none of your business.
4-1. I don't like the odds.
That's not a real gun.
Like to back your judgment? It will only cost you a kneecap if you're wrong. You, get into the car.
Yes, of course.
Now listen. I make it just after 2:30. And this is a very, very quiet, lonely road. It might be days before anyone discovered anything that might happen here. I'm going to get into that car and drive away. If anyone makes a move before I get in, if anyone gets brave after I get in, I'm going to shoot the four of you dead.
We'll get you next time, you bloody, lousy hippie!
Except for the bruises and the split lip, my passenger was standard international youth. Close your eyes and stick a pin anywhere on the map of the world, and someone with a beard and hair and Levi's will say, "Ouch!" I was thinking of someone with a beard and hair and Levi's who would never say anything again when my passenger's voice broke through my thoughts.
You may have saved my life.
The thought doesn't turn me on.
No?
In China at one time, if you saved a man's life, that was you settled with him for as long as he lived.
You don't have to get uptight about that.
Yeah, right. Another thing, there's a funny old fallacy. When you see four characters duffing up a singleton, the four characters have to be in the wrong. Direct me somewhere.
About another 1/2 mile. You'll see gates on the right, then a long avenue.
And where does that land us?
Balfin House.
And there it was, dropped right in my lap. Come on in, Trojan horse. We've kept you sugar lumps. Men on the walls of Jericho waving and calling. Now just you keep your shiny trumpets right in their cases. We're knocking the walls down for you. So much for me and all my fine scenarios of infiltration. The gates were high, wide open, and at once been handsome. The avenue was broad and long, flanked by mature trees. Just enough potholes to be interesting. An occasional executed tree trunk like a beached grey whale. A rabbit, bored with the usual predators, successfully ran across the headlight's beam.
Was that a real gun back there?
What gun?
Point taken. You don't seem to have much time for the human race.
Why waste time on a failed experiment?
Well, why waste time on me?
Sometimes I get bored not wasting time.
We're here.
I pulled the car up at the bottom of a flight of steps. The building was a darker darkness, except for a tiny light, high up, like a small deprived star waiting to be asked to join a firmament. On the wall to the right of the enormous door, there was a huge, red, aerosol word. Brothel. We got out of the car, and my passenger turned to me uncertainly.
Well, thanks,
Tell me about it in the morning.
The morning?
The Underground magazine said you had 56 rooms here.
You don't look like commune material.
You don't look like a personnel officer.
All right, then. And you can talk to Jason in the morning. He was a personnel officer.
Beyond the front door, there stretched a hall the size of a skinny tennis court. Somewhere, a low-watt bulb had given up illumination and now amused itself making the shadows interesting and weird. Scattered around were children's toys, with that peculiar air of suspended animation that only belongs to things that children use. Corridors at right angles to corridors at right angles to corridors. Then a door. He unlocked it and pressed down a switch.
Oh, when's someone going to fix this bloody light?
Yeah, when is somebody?
I told them at the last meeting the bulb was blown.
Now there's democracy. A simple idiot like me would just have put in a new one.
Yeah, you'll have to undress in the darkness.
Blind people have to do it all the time.
Yeah, good night.
He went out and I heard the key turn in the lock. A key in a commune, I thought. A contradiction in terms, I thought. Or maybe an amputated sense of property having a phantom pain. The room was as bare and cold as an old bone. It remembered too many winters. A long-dead architect had made this room a no-go area for the sun. It was a place of small, moist sadness and weeping gone unheard. Even the mice were muted. There were two beds, estranged from each other, as far as the room allowed. Army surplus from an army of Spartans. The blankets rejects from a hair shirt factory. As I got into my barbed wire bed, I could hear a distant, jagged sound like static. A door slammed like a blow. Feet thudded angrily down a stair and kept on thudding towards my door.
Selfish pig. Selfish pig. Selfish.
Room service?
I'm sorry. I didn't know.
How could you? I just arrived.
He bring you back?
The other way round.
He didn't tell me there was anyone here.
Maybe you didn't give him a chance.
He's run out of chances.
I charge overtime rates for counselling sessions this time in the morning.
I can't even stay in the same room as him anymore.
It's a big house. Big enough to absorb a tired old cliché like that.
One of the cool ones, eh?
Just one of the tired ones. There are millions of us. One day we're going to take over the world.
I'll use the other bed.
She walked across the room, then the other bed sagged and she caught her breath. Perhaps at the bed's coldness. Or perhaps it was an epicene English poet described as the rough male kiss of blankets. Somewhere in the outside distance an owl screamed and some tiny creature died. Then there was a lot of silence, but no sleep.
Do you want to come in beside me?
How would that grab him?
He would hate it.
In that case, I would hate it too.
You're like him. You both still have a lot of ego to destroy.
My guru says it doesn't count if somebody else helps you to do it.
Your guru sounds like a ripe old queen.
What are you trying to do? Substantiate that big red aerosol word on the wall outside?
One of our ex-inmates did that.
Yeah?
Why the surprise?
I had a thing going in my head about hostile natives.
No way. I don't think there's one local could spell the word brothel.
Who could spell it?
He was a Jesus freak. His name was Jonathan Taverner.
Every revolutionary is a Puritan. He was about the same height as me, but slimmer. During our bearded days, we were sometimes mistaken for each other by people who needed glasses, or people who had too many. I would ask him if he had kissed any lepers lately, and he would smile. Once he said to me, "Do you need proof of God? Do you light a candle to see the sun?" In the morning, the girl was gone. The blankets lay on the floor. She had stepped out of bed and sloughed them as a snake sloughs its skin. I tried not to let that tell me anything about her or about myself, made up the beds, and walked out into the maze of corridors.
Down a winding staircase and into the hallway came a strange procession. Three girls with long straight hair and long straight skirts, grave, stately, dedicated with ritual faces. Victorian somehow. Each girl carried a loaded chamber pot with a kind of reverence, and I tried to guess which girl had been my unexpected roommate. The one whose utensil writhed with overblown painted pink roses? The one with the Art Deco? The one with the plain unadorned white china? They disappeared towards the back of the house, my bedpan Brontes, and I followed a smell of coffee which led me into an enormous room. A young man looked up as I came in. He had a pale, oval, girlish face and the shy manner of one who had never been and never would be sure of his welcome anywhere.
There's coffee, and I could do you some eggs if you like.
Great.
They're our own eggs.
That's a good trick if you can do it.
From our own hens, I mean.
You're the steady cook around here?
Oh, no. No. We're supposed to take it in turns. It should have been Simon this week, but he was out late last night. And
he's still in bed, and he told you to get lost.
He was tired, and I quite like cooking anyway.
You're what used to be called in the dear old dead domestic days a treasure. Talking of the dear old dead domestic days, I saw a weird procession coming downstairs.
It's really too much, isn't it? Every morning, all of us with our potties.
Why?
Oh, it's Jason. He's suddenly into recycling, producing methane from human waste. I don't quite understand it myself.
Jason's the man to know round here, isn't he?
Well, we try not to be too rigidly structured.
But Jason's the money tree.
Right. Of course, we all chipped in, but, well, yes, as you say, Jason is the money tree.
Did he earn it, inherit it, or steal it?
If I told you how Jason earns his money,
yes,
he'd probably kill me.
The prospect did not seem to worry him unduly. There's always a pecking order, I thought. And if there is one thing you can never trust, it's a pecking order. Apex B, B-pex C, Apex B and C, B and C peck D. And just when you think you've got it straight, you find that D turns round and pecks A. He went off happily to make fresh coffee and cook more eggs. That was his niche in life, and hooray for him. One day he would make a fine wife for someone, or several someones. The breakfast room was at the front of the house. It was bare except for a table that could have seated a whole monastic order. Newspapers were scattered around, all with different dates. A seed catalogue, an abandoned letter. I never got that coffee. I never got those eggs. Instead, I got my last night's good deed come bursting in.
I want to talk to you.
Coffee, Simon.
Get lost, David.
I'm going to buy you a big yellow button to wear, stamped on it in black. Get lost, David. Then you won't have to talk to him at all.
What I have to say is private.
I have no secrets from David.
It's about you and Sarah.
Was that her name?
You certainly ask a big return for a small favour.
That favour bought me nothing.
You spent the night with her.
I spent the night in the same room as her. Get lost, Simon.
You're a troublemaker. I don't think we want you here.
That's hardly for you to say, is it?
Right. I'm going to report this whole thing to Jason.
Schadenfreude.
What's that?
An unholy glee at the misfortunes of others.
Yes. Possibly. And again, well, in another way, no.
It might be easier just to share the joke.
Sarah is Jason's wife.
Imagine being a house and being stuck with people. Century after century of undiluted people. And you not able to do anything about it. Not able to run away. Your pride forbidding you even to fall down. When one wet day the bulldozer came lurching over the horizon, who could blame you for screaming out, "Welcome, friend! Where have you been? And what the devil kept you?" In an obscure way, I felt I owed the house something. Or perhaps more accurately, that I should pay another's debt.
Anyway, next thing, there I was, scrubbing that large red aerosol word off the side of the building. A tall girl in dungarees and a woolen shirt and heavy Wellington boots appeared and watched me and laughed.
I've become quite fond of that big, nasty red word.
I thought it might render the commune liable to prosecution under the Trades Description Act.
Some people might consider that a moot point.
Somebody obviously did.
His name was Jonathan Taverner, daft as a brush.
The name seems to ring another bell.
He blew himself up in London. He was on his way to plant a homemade bomb somewhere when it went off and scattered him over the landscape.
The special branch man didn't like me. The old guilt by association syndrome. I said, look, man, let's keep it all in the one bit. You asked me here to identify my brother. He said, what's that you've got in your pocket? And I told him it was an old snuff box I'd picked up in an antique shop. And he said, great, you can take him away in that. There was more than that, but not much. And ironically, his wristwatch, unscathed, time triumphing over terror.
Why are you looking like that?
Hmm?
You shivered. Somebody walking over your grave.
No, I was walking over somebody else's.
Come and see the garden.
We walked across a wide stretch of lawn, still unyielding with last night's frost. Occasional clumps of snowdrops and the early spears of daffodils. A path led through an avenue of tall trees, precise and bare and anatomical with winter. But the first buds were already breaking through, ready to reflesh the skeleton for spring. We passed through a wooden gate in a high wall and entered what seemed acres of walled garden.
Someday there's gonna be a big town out there, son.
Don't even say that. There might be some freaky planning officer listening.
You mean the early spring cabbages are planted? The garden's your chore, is it?
Right. Only it's no chore.
What's your name?
Esther.
And what are you running away from?
Why are people always supposed to be running away? Why can't they be running towards something?
Not so loud. That idea catches on. Harley Street will be choked with second-hand couches. All right, then. What are you running towards away from?
I was in films.
That takes in a lot of territory.
I was a starlet.
And you gave it all up for love of this?
A matter of job satisfaction, darling. I wanted a job where I didn't have to take the boss's fingerprints home with me every
David!
Night.
Simon!
Something's wrong.
We ran out of the garden, along the avenue and across the lawn to the house. A battered station wagon was drawn up at the steps. Three children had got out of it and were standing, crying helplessly. A girl with bright red hair clutched a little girl to her, and blood shone across the child's split forehead. People came spilling out of the house. Dave and Simon, two girls, a young man new to me. They stood around, not crying, but looking as helpless as the children. Then David took the child gently from the red-haired girl.
It's all right, darling. David will make it better. Indoors, the rest of you. David's got sweets and all the things you like that are bad for you.
What happened, Sarah?
Bloody McAllister. He could have killed us all.
Oh, not McAllister, not again.
Yes, again, Simon. And what are you going to do about it?
When Jason gets back.
What then? Another stinking meeting and crap about non-violence, and that's my child in there with a bloody head split.
Look, Sarah, I'm...
Why don't you do something about it? What kind of men are you? Great. Right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and find McAllister and spit in his face.
I'll come with you.
We don't need your heroics.
Oh, shut up, Simon.
Let's go. We drove off. The hard morning light was incredible. The trunks of the beech trees glistened like grey silk. Chaffinches performed mass aerobatics among the hedges, still gathered up in flocks, still not trusting the signs of coming spring with its message to break away and form into mating pairs. Through the gates and onto the main road. Every now and then she would glance at me, checking what she had missed, or perhaps escaped. You drive well.
Why shouldn't I?
You're a female chauvinist pig. Tell me about McAllister.
Pure lumpen.
Born here, brought up here, never been anywhere else. Battered wife, drunk. Very physical, nothing else.
Why are the locals so uptight?
They didn't used to be. We thought we had a good relationship going with them.
And then?
Then along came this Jesus freak, Jonathan Tavener.
He caused the trouble?
He tripped out one night and tried to burn down the church.
You know them and I know them. We all know them. The people who should be supplied with an instant do-it-yourself crucifixion kit and told to get on with it and leave the rest of us in sinful peace. I let the subject drop in deference to the sudden maxim I had improvised a moment earlier. This was going to be one of those days, if I let it. So I shifted the emphasis back to McAllister.
It's my turn this week to drive the children to school. It's about 10 miles away.
Isn't there a school bus?
The local kids started beating our lot up.
Charming.
Anyway, there's a straight stretch of road about 3 miles along. I was doing about 60 when I saw McAllister's van coming towards me. Then suddenly I realised that was exactly what he was doing.
He tried to force you off the road?
He damn nearly did. I stood on everything and nearly went through the windscreen. Ginny split her head open, the other kids were thrown about all over the place.
Where do we find McAllister?
The pub.
The pub won't be open.
The pub is never closed.
As we came into the village, it began to rain. A small grey rain falling on small grey houses. And outside one of them, the pub, a small grey van. McAllister was standing at the bar. He was, as Sarah had said, pure lumpen. It had taken generations of selective inbreeding to evolve that brutal face. He looked at me, then at Sarah. And then I hit him. And hit him! And hit him! And hit him! And hit him!
Ah! You killed him.
Go on, spit in his face. Go on, that's what you came to do, isn't it?
He hasn't got a face anymore.
She walked out of the pub, and all the way back to the car, she kept ahead of me, not looking at me. I was infectious, contagious, radioactive. Or worse, everything she had felt about McAllister reduced to a terrifying absurdity. The rain had settled in now, drowning the landscape, bleeding it of whatever little colour it had. She sat hunched over the wheel, silent, but not enjoying that silence. When the new dark age comes, the world will be filled with people like McAllister.
You'll have nothing to worry about in that case.
Self-sufficiency. That's the name of the game, isn't it?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Grow your own food, invent your own technology, do your own thing. Great. All nicely packed and vacuum sealed. Perfect, if you live in a vacuum.
I just think you overdid it a bit.
A nice, friendly violence would have been better, huh?
Jason's not going to like this.
Does Jason exist?
He exists, all right.
Simon said I could talk to him this morning.
He went off early somewhere.
When does he come back?
I don't know.
If you don't know, who does?
Nobody. More and more, we all know less and less about Jason.
When we got back, the house seemed empty, and Sarah vanished off into its emptiness. I sought out my room and lay down on the sullen bed. The room nagged at me like a hard luck story. A nothing arrangement of space. A piece of territory nobody wanted. All the non-ingredients for sensory deprivation. And just to create the illusion that something might be happening, I got off the bed and opened up my holdall to find a shirt that was not freckled with McAllister's blood. That was when I found that someone had taken the gun. Property is theft, the man said, and I would not give him much of an argument on that, except perhaps to add the cautious qualification. It's always important to know exactly who did the stealing. Come in. What can I do for you, David?
Talk to me.
All right, then. Any taboo subjects? Sex, religion, politics?
Tell me about violence.
Nobody needs to be told about violence.
I do.
Who do you want to kill?
Nobody. I'd just like to understand violence, that's all.
If you've never wanted to kill somebody, you'll never understand violence. If you have, you understand it already.
Did McAllister know that?
Yep. McAllister knows the rules.
Is that why you did it?
Right.
Suppose it had turned out the other way.
McAllister would have had to kill me first.
I think you've told me what I want to know.
What did you do in the Great War, Daddy?
I was a systems analyst. One day, I really analysed the system and found I didn't like it.
That sounds a bit over-rehearsed.
The truth always does.
Did Simon tell you about me having a gun?
Well, yes, he did.
Let me bring you up to date. Somebody's nicked it.
Bloody fool. I told him.
What bloody fool, David, and what did you tell him?
Why don't you go away?
Why should I?
You don't seem to be...
Commune material?
Well, yes.
Everybody keeps telling me that.
Maybe they're right.
The voice of the people is the voice of God.
I actually happen to believe that.
What the hell do you or any of you know about the people?
Oh, what a clumsy thing I am. I keep treading on working class backgrounds.
You'd better believe that, too.
Jason's going to love you. Oh, yes. Jason's going to love you to death.
For years, I watched my father die. Not from mercury or lead, asbestosis, silicosis, anthrax, or anything like that. His sickness never was that physical, that dignified. He died of, yes, sir, and it won't happen again, sir, and of course you're right, sir. Every day another layer of skin flayed from what had once upon a time been integrity. He lived for years in an iron lung of defeat. Then one day he closed his eyes and died of chronic indignity. The door slammed as David took his offended middle-class illusions away, and I lay down on the comfortless bed and wondered about all the things that David had not said, and gradually I dozed off. I awoke with a start into a premature dusk and something glimmering white in the air in the center of the room.
Ha, ha, ha. I frightened you.
Hello, Ginny.
I get a bandage on my head.
It looks very pretty.
That's silly. I'm a wounded soldier.
A girl soldier?
They have girl soldiers in Israel.
I've seen them.
Have you?
Yeah, hundreds of them.
I've seen a ghost.
Now that's really something. I mean, anyone can see a girl soldier, but ghosts are special.
It was dark.
Yeah?
And he was singing a Jesus song.
Mm-hmm.
And when he saw me, he ran away.
Were you frightened?
No, I don't believe in ghosts.
She went off, trailing her 7-year-old skepticism behind her like a doll that was sometimes alive and sometimes not, according to the necessities of the moment. The poor do not even have ghosts, I thought. Democracy will triumph one fine day when a ghost is finally authenticated in a council housing scheme. I left the oppressive house with its ghost that sang hymns and ran away from children. Outside, the rain had ceased, and the girl, Esther, appeared, shapeless in a red duffel coat and carrying a basket of eggs.
Feel like a walk?
You look like you're auditioning for Little Red Riding Hood.
I'm going to see a customer.
What does he buy?
Eggs.
We walked round the back of the house, then away from it. We followed a steep, muddy, treacherous path into the landscape. It stretched grey into the distance, floating in a way only the Chinese artists have mastered. Somewhere an invisible curlew celebrated the loneliness of everything.
I love that sound.
You're a romantic.
After my life and hard times in the cinema salt mines, you must be joking. You knew Jonathan Taverner, didn't you?
What makes you think so?
Oh, I don't know. Something about your expression when you were scrubbing that word off the wall.
Yes, I knew him.
Now there was a romantic for you. Except for one thing.
What did he lack?
Stamina.
I wouldn't have said that.
Neither would he. He saw his life as a series of betrayals. From Santa Claus through Marx and Mao and finally even God.
The path went writhing through thick, wet brown heather. In the distance were rolling hills, ridged like corduroy with forestry ditches. Then suddenly there was a field, and at the far end of it a cottage fenced around, and a man leaning on a gate, watching us approach. I knew him at once, and immediately he knew me. We had once had a conversation, and now it echoed in my head.
Look, man, let's keep it all in the one bit. You asked me here to identify my brother.
What's that you've got in your pocket?
An old snuff box. I picked it up in an antique shop.
Great. You can take him away in that.
He was a big, powerful man. Precise, exact, empirical. His eyes were blue and bright with the belief that people would sooner lie than not. There was something about him that was as ancient as the Old Testament. We looked at each other in silence, each of us waiting for Esther.
Your eggs, Mr. Hardacre. Same price as usual.
How do you do it in these days of inflation?
Keeping it a secret until we're asked to save the world.
You're new, aren't you, Mr...
Tallien. Peter Tallien.
Oh, I'll tell you how new he is. That's the first time I've heard his name.
My name's Hardacre. Salem Hardacre.
Not an easy name to forget.
Tallien's another name with a kind of built-in promise to remember.
What are you two talking about?
Names. Their origins, their meanings, the psychological effect they have on those who bear them. A fascinating study.
Which computers are making a branch of archaeology.
Right. You a drinking man, Tallien?
Not noticeably.
I like a drop of beer myself. You'll find me at the local any night. About 8.
Someday the state will wither away, and we'll look at each other with clear, kind, pastoral eyes, and we will dance in the streets which are becoming strange and green and new with grass. A great new song will rise high above yesterday's hideous architecture. People will fall about, drunk with love. Then, when they consider it has gone on long enough, men will appear with whips and teeth clicking like stopwatches. The apparatniks with a new name, a brand new name. And how about that, Mr. Salem Hardacre?
How about Mr. Hardacre?
He's fuzz.
Ex-fuzz.
He told you.
Over 20 years in the force.
Then one day on the road to Damascus he heard a voice.
You don't believe him?
That road to Damascus, I see some pretty weird people. What brought him up here?
Well, seems he always had a hankering to be a naturalist. He's particularly interested in badgers.
A perfect alibi for roaming the countryside at night.
You could be an easy person to dislike.
I am.
You work hard at it.
I think people should show themselves worthy of love, should actually earn it.
The old Protestant ethic.
That's just a phrase you've picked up somewhere. A parrot could learn it in half an hour.
Thank you very much.
The trouble with you half-hour so-called revolutionaries is that you throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I find you more and more endearing.
This welter of love you go in for. Under all the goo, it's really a belief in mass production. And in the end, the effect's the same. The whole concept is debased.
Jonathan Taverner wouldn't have agreed with you.
He didn't. And look what happened to him. After that, we walked the rest of the way in silence. It was that luminous hour when everything we think of as inanimate seems to declare itself and contradict our thinking. When, for a moment, our alienation from the world trembles on an edge of extinction. It was dark when we reached the house, and with the darkness, the alienation was back. The children were all reading, and the scene had the uneasy devotional atmosphere of ideas being received. They were book people, the bureaucracy of intellect. If it wasn't written down, it wasn't real. And if it was written down, its reality ceased there. Sarah was reading The Dialectic of Sex, which seemed to me unnecessary. She must have caught the thought, for she put the book down and stared straight at me.
How did you find our ex-policeman?
Tallien spotted him right away.
Now that I find very interesting.
Don't read too much into it, Simon.
So your name's Tallien, is it?
That's right, Peter Tallien.
I don't think you've met Jenny and either.
Hi. Hello. Don't happen to know anything about chickens, do you?
I'm afraid not.
I'd have thought you'd have been expert at wringing their necks.
Simon's got a hang-up. He's always flexing the muscles he hasn't got.
Maybe somebody once kicked sand in his face.
By the way, Tallien, you now have a light bulb in your room.
Thank you, David.
Well, don't thank me. I feel I may have taken some of the mystery out of your life.
In my straight days, we called this bitching. Now it's group therapy. I think I'll go for a walk.
Dear Esther, so unflinchingly middle class. Any kind of confrontation terrifies her.
Maybe she has a point. About the new light bulb in my room.
Yes?
I didn't happen to get a chamber pot as well.
As a matter of fact, you did.
Now I feel I really belong. The chamber pot was charming, but it did nothing for the room. No thing, no person could ever do anything for that room, except haunt it. So I left it to its own baleful devices and went quietly out of the house, keeping to the dark shadows, skirting the stretch of lawn, until I reached the main avenue. And there I encountered a walking shadow that was darker than the rest.
Who is it?
Peter Tallien.
Oh, you're a restless soul. Don't you agree?
I don't agree. I don't disagree. I spend my life listening to people telling me what I am.
And not really listening at all.
Wrong. I listen very, very carefully. And I learn a lot about other people.
That's a kind of upside-down ego trip.
Are you waiting for someone?
Now, what makes you think that?
Feeling.
Lady Chatterley slipping out to meet the gamekeeper.
There are other reasons for meeting.
Tell me about them.
Did you deliberately take me along to see Hardacre this evening?
You're full of surprises.
Or perhaps to let Hardacre see me.
Not surprises, paranoia.
There's a lot of it about.
Well, I like it. I like the thought of us having an ex-cop at a screen or would-be communicants.
The boot would be on the other foot.
Explain that.
He might insist on vetting everyone who comes here.
That's an explanation.
Who's to say he's a lapsed cop? He could still be in business.
Doing what?
Leaning on the commune here.
Oh, come on. How could he do that?
Oh, come on. Anyone who's 5 minutes into the alternative bit could give you chapter and verse.
I must say you live a full, rich life of the imagination.
And I've got to get on with it. Right now. Down at the pub.
Oh, isn't that rather asking for trouble?
Not for me. I've got police protection. A long, dark road. Black hedges. Once an overhang of trees offering their arms for gallows. A moon seen fitfully through thickening clouds. Once I controlled the tides. Then one day I lay between the feet of men. Who now controls the surge of oceans? The pub was sparse with people. Hardacre stood in a corner leaning against the counter. Two old men moved arthritic hands across a table playing dominoes. A group of rural yobbos with red, beef-fed rural faces laughed loudly at jokes much older than they were. The laughter ceased as I walked in, and there was a silence as they waited for the barman to pronounce my doom.
Your barman here.
You too, Judge, when I've had a word with the licensing court.
What are you talking about?
McAllister drinking out of ours.
Oh, now, look, if you
come,
think...
Come now, gentlemen, why don't we let bygones be bygones?
All right, Mr. Hardacre, as a favor to you.
Good man. Now, just bring us a couple of whiskies in the back room.
The back room had the kind of proportions you would need for a coffin to bury a giraffe in, standing up. On one wall was a photograph of a Clydesdale horse. The man standing proudly beside it had a heavy black moustache and one of those strong, uncomplicated faces that died by the 100,000 in the First World War. And never were replaced. Hardacre squeezed into a chair and gave me a look from his repertoire of policeman looks. This one had a kind of creaking friendliness.
You did a good job on McAllister.
Not really. He's still alive.
You've grown a lot harder since we last met.
Cause and effect, maybe?
McAllister has a fractured jaw, a broken arm, and an assortment of cracked ribs.
Did we come here to talk about McAllister?
His brother's the local constable. He was more than keen to do something about you.
But you squared it, huh?
If you like to put it that way. No tiny word of gratitude?
Just tell me what it's going to cost me.
It might actually cost you nothing.
Sometimes I prefer cops who just take money.
I brought back your gun. Go on. Take it before somebody comes in.
Maybe I'd be smarter to wait till somebody does.
Please yourself. I thought you might feel impotent without it. A sense of flagging purpose and all that Freudian crap. But maybe you're one of those versatile killers.
Death hath 10,000 several entrances. Give me the gun. Thank you. How's the badger business?
Slow.
I don't think you'd recognize a badger if you found one in your bed.
I remember seeing one years ago when I took my kids to the zoo.
You have kids?
A boy and a girl.
Funny. I just don't see you as a father.
It took my wife 20 years to say the same thing.
God bless us all, said Tiny Tim. Especially the dedicated ones.
Yeah.
You're wanted on the phone, Mr. Hardacre.
I'll be right there.
I sat and looked at the photograph on the wall. The massive horse, prinked and primped, to gleam through a vanished country afternoon. The man's face haunted me. Did he die in the mud of France, or withering into the desert sand? Or was he still alive, no longer simple, innocent, just old, arthritic, playing dominoes? Then Hardacre was back in the room, and he seemed to be running some kind of temperature that wasn't physical.
I have to go.
I'll come with you.
Have I made my point?
I reckon.
We're both after the same person. I don't give a damn who gets him as long as he's got.
Fine, as far as it goes.
I'm listening.
If I get to him first, what then?
You asking me to try and stop you?
I'd hate to think you might get two badges for the price of one.
Who knows? Who knows?
Outside, the clouds had blacked out the moon, and there were small spits of rain. Hardacre strode along, stolid, heavy-footed, a ploughman's stride. For a while, he was uncharacteristically silent. Silence is not a policeman's virtue. Silence tells you nothing. The effort was too great for him, and finally he spoke.
Tell me about your brother.
You probably know more about him than I do.
Were you surprised he turned out the way he did?
Once, when we were both kids, we spent a whole summer in Belfast, and he hated the place. Man, I can't begin to tell you how much he hated it.
Mm-hmm.
One day, I took him to get his hair cut. He would be about, 8 or 9 at the time. He sat there rigid in the chair, ignoring all the barber's well-meant blarney. And then, when the job was finished, he collected all his cut hair off the floor and put it in a paper bag.
Never.
Yeah. He brought that paper bag all the way home and then threw it away.
How about that? He hated the place so much he wouldn't even leave his hair clippings there.
Oh, he hated deeply. He loved deeply. But yesterday's love was today's hate. That made him dangerous to himself and other people.
You didn't like your brother very much, did you?
Did it matter anymore?
No. Except that it's unusual to want to avenge someone you didn't like. Unless, of course...
Unless there's another reason.
Right.
And if there is, do you think I'd tell you?
No.
What should we talk about now? If God is dead, then all things are permitted. My mother's God was fiercely, savagely alive to her. And yet she let a baby die because her God forbade the human remedies that would have saved it. Perhaps her God was dead, and all her bitter, blinded love of him was only necrophilia. She was a cruel, beautiful woman, and my brother inherited her beauty and her cruelty.
You know the name of this man you're looking for?
Yes.
I think I could guess it.
Do that, but not out loud.
I'll always remember you as the man who killed the art of conversation.
I'll tell you his name if you tell me who your spy is in the commune.
No way. There's a path across the fields here to my cottage. Good night.
He vanished into the darkness, a heavy, plodding man whose mind was neither heavy nor plodding. Another mile or so brought me to the somber gates of Balfin House and the long avenue with its felled trees and scent of dead leaves. At the head of the avenue, a dense clump of rhododendrons and the stables and outhouses, and the beam from a powerful torch hit me straight between the eyes.
When you're ready, I would like my eyes back.
Oh, sorry, Italian.
Oh, it's...
It's Ivor, isn't it?
Right.
Anything wrong?
You've been to the village?
Yes.
You didn't happen to see anyone on your way up the avenue?
No one.
I nearly caught him.
Who?
The character that's been ripping off the hens. Just caught a glimpse of him in the night.
Enough to recognise?
No. Just a sort of blur of movement. He's still there. Watching.
How do you know?
I just know.
You're getting bad vibrations, huh?
Very bad.
Let's flush him out. But we didn't flush him out. The light brought sudden leaves leaping from the darkness, and the eyes of small animals like tiny illuminated buttons, but nothing else. And yet he was there, and now we both knew it, and felt it. A cold, mad, silent evil. I think it was then, stumbling about in the darkness, the torch flashing irregularly like a mutinous lighthouse beam, the small eyes of the scampering animals, the smell of earth. I think it was then I first began to feel uneasy, an unease that stretched back yesterday and beyond, and sat black and heavy in the future.
Let's go back to the house.
I'm not imagining things, you know.
I believe you.
Hens aren't the stupid birds everyone thinks. They have definite personalities.
Did you have pet names for them, like George Sand or Indira Gandhi?
Well, there was a tapey one I used to think of as Joan of Arc.
She's probably met the same fate. Do I hear music?
It's Jenny. She could have been concert standard.
Are you voicing a regret?
No, not me. Admiration, yeah. Regrets, no. For regrets, real bitter, angry regrets, you should apply to her old man.
Send him the cost of the lessons when you're rich.
If I was rich, I wouldn't give him penny one.
That's how the rich stay rich.
Do you like music?
Yes, I do.
The piano teacher was thin and sharp and angular, a walking dissonance. Her fingers were like roots of ginger. Her upper lip was fringed with dark hair. She looked as though the sexes had tossed a coin for her and both lost. She got herself pregnant by a blind piano tuner, and my mother cancelled our piano lessons because the piano tuner was a Catholic. We walked into the house and towards the music. It came from the back of the house, where Ivor and Jenny had their living space. Their room was enormous and simple. It even dwarfed the grand piano that Jenny sat at. There were paintings on the walls. Fishing boats. The work of a child, until you looked at them a second time, and then they seemed either the work of a knowing child or a second childhood. There was a big brass bed and no more furniture than required. Everything was neat and spotless and domestic as a knife and fork. You could have said the same about Jenny, and you would have been wrong.
Hello, Peter Talion.
I found him lurking in the shrubbery.
Did you search him for missing hens?
He's clean, baby.
Then give him a drink, darling.
Only beer, I'm afraid.
It's Talion who should be afraid. Ivor brewed the beer himself. 2 pints and you think you're Genghis Khan. 3 pints and you are.
Beer is fine. What was that piece you were playing?
It's rather sweet, isn't it? It's called Young Girls in the Garden. It turns Ivor on.
I still don't know any better. Music makes pictures for me.
Edwardian ladies wearing long dresses with leg of mutton sleeves, little straw hats on their heads, and parasols to protect them from the sun that never sets on their empire. One of Ivor's most endearing working-class fantasies.
Oh, for God's sake, leave us off fantasies. You upper class have taken everything else. Here, try this, Talion.
It's very good.
Makes you wonder what that stuff is they sell in pubs.
Makes quite an impact.
So do you, my friend.
Story of my life. Everywhere I go, people use me as a peg for their own hang-ups.
Anyway, we're on your side, Talion.
Do I have a side to be on?
If you want to join the commune, you have to be voted in.
Maybe it's time I started canvassing.
You've left it too late. Jason came back an hour ago.
Hope deferred maketh the heart sick. I had almost ceased to believe in the existence of Jason. He was a threat, a promise, a symbol, an in-joke, pie in the sky, a pot of gold at the rainbow's end, the money tree. He was everything, plus or minus, except real. Another pint of home brew and I made my way back to my vacuum of a room. I had just sprawled down on the bed when suddenly, silently, Esther was there.
I looked in to see if you were all right.
Why shouldn't I be?
I thought perhaps the locals might...
I told you I had police protection.
I've been thinking about what you said about Hardacre.
He's got a spy in this house.
What makes you so sure of that?
This does. Yes, it's a gun. Somebody in this house nicked it from my case. Hardacre gave it back to me tonight.
I'm not sure I care for that.
Any idea who our spy might be?
Any one of us? Could be me.
Yes, I thought of that. You tripping across the meadow with a basket of eggs, like Little Red Riding Hood. What could be more idyllic and less suspicious than that? Would you say you see him oftener than anyone else?
Yes.
But it's not your exclusive chore.
No, we've all taken a turn at it, with the possible exception of Jason, perhaps.
Ah, yes, Jason.
It's taken me 4 years to get my garden going.
So what?
4 years of back-breaking work and disappointments and starting again. 4 years. Resurrecting something that was left to die. Aching muscles and blistered hands.
So what?
And now it's all going to be destroyed by imbeciles like you running around with guns.
And imbeciles like Hardacre, who don't give a damn for your garden either.
You and Hardacre could destroy this commune.
I agree, that might even be necessary.
That mustn't be allowed, Durham.
It might be avoided.
How?
I can't speak for Hardacre, of course.
All right, then, speak for yourself.
I'm looking for a character called Hugo Albert. Well, what's so funny?
Hugo Albert?
I'm still looking for Hugo Albert.
Oh, you won't find Hugo Albert here, ever.
No.
And yet... Yes.
And yet...
You've already found him.
I knew everything about Hugo Albert. Height, weight, tattoo marks, educational background and sexual proclivities, the way he parted his hair, where his parents had died, and in what air crash. Various people had variously handed over their jigsaw pieces. I knew a lot. I knew he had caused my brother's death. I knew that I had never set eyes on him. Somewhere, a million miles away, a bell began to ring. Mechanical. Insistent. Not like the bell that should have been ringing in my head. Not like that one at all. That one would have been tolling, not ringing, and I should have known for whom it told, as Esther knew immediately.
That's the telephone.
Whose wig is it to answer it?
Oh, whoever happens to be nearest us.
What are we waiting for, then? I followed her fear along the dark corridors of the too silent house. The telephone bell kept shrilling, and her anxiety had programmed itself into the sound. All right, then, answer it.
I...
Or would you rather I did?
No. Baffin House. Yes. Yes.
Who is it?
You heard? Yes. Yes, I'll come in the car. Just stay put. Oh, yes, yes, I'll be as quick as I can.
Who was it?
Oh, I haven't got time to explain.
We'll take my car. You can explain on the way.
Oh, all right.
But in the car, she said nothing, and kept on saying it as we drove down the long avenue and out of the gates towards the main road that gleamed wetly in the darkness. Where are we going?
There's a telephone booth about half a mile outside the village.
Why?
Why what?
Why half a mile outside the village?
Some kind of cock-up by the post office people.
You were going to break down and tell me things.
I've changed my mind.
Scared?
It's partly that.
And partly what else?
Other people are involved.
These other people could include me.
No.
I just like...
Oh, for Christ's sake, don't lay any more heavy traps on me.
Right.
We're coming up to the place now. There, on the right.
There's a torch in the glove compartment. Thanks. You'd better stay put while I look around.
Okay.
The telephone booth looked forlorn, useless, aware of its own absurdity. Some of its glass had been broken by a half-hearted vandal. It seemed empty, but there was a dark pool of something just outside its door. As I walked across, the feeling came back again. Someone, something, a presence, an atmosphere, watching, wicked. I opened the door of the telephone booth, and someone behind me gasped.
I told you to stay in the bloody car!
Almost certainly, at some point in the 70s, someone had said of Simon, or he may even have thought it of himself, approvingly, "Man, that Simon is a real head." And now he was exactly that. No more, no less. A severed head beside a telephone in a booth built by mistake miles from anywhere on a country road. I phoned the police and then went back outside to Esther. She was standing there, very still, very silent. The police will be here soon. Can you hear me, Esther? Come and sit in the car. Her hand was cold and smooth as glass, and she came with me like a frightened child. I helped her into the back of the car, and she sat back in the corner and closed her eyes and sighed a strange, long sigh. I went back to the telephone booth and opened the door. It was like lifting up a coffin lid, but I managed to avoid the dead stare while I dialed a number and listened to it ring and ring and ring. Oh, come on, come on.
Balfin House.
Who is that?
Come to that. Who the hell are you at this time of night?
Is that Jenny?
It is. Freezing cold and very, very cross.
Look, Jenny, something has happened. Don't ask me for details because it's sickening.
What do you want me to do?
I need someone for Esther. She's in shock.
Where are you? Are you still there, Talion?
I think you'd better make your way to the police station.
I'll do that.
Far off. In the direction of the village, two lights shone like the eyes of a cat. Then they grew and merged, and behind them came the sound of an engine, and behind that, the police. There were two of them, a sergeant and a constable, and I had a feeling I had met one of them before, and in a way I had.
Right, McAllister. Look in the telephone box.
Very good, Sergeant.
McAllister. Pull yourself together, McAllister.
I'll be all right.
Now then, let's hear from you.
My name's Peter Talion.
I seem to have heard that name before.
Shut up, McAllister. They tell me you're not averse to violence, Talion.
Only when necessary.
That thing in the telephone booth. Was that necessary?
I wouldn't know about that.
You're a bloody liar!
Don't let me have to speak to you again, McAllister.
At the same time, Talion, there might just be something in what he says.
There isn't.
Maybe you should come along with us to the station.
The sooner the better. There's a girl in the back of my car. She's in deep shock.
Who is she?
She's from Balfin House. Her name's Esther.
Have a look, McAllister.
Sergeant, and she doesn't look too clever.
Right, McAllister. You drive her to the station. You, Talion, you get in that car with me.
Jenny was waiting at the police station. Cool, detached, elegant, patrician. Everything that was needed. She had dug out a little man from somewhere, a doctor. He looked excavated from a deep mine of sleep, and his thin hair still bore the patterns of his pillow. Together they carried Esther away. She was still unconscious, and her skin had taken on a strange bluish tinge. I made a statement, and then it all began. Blank hours of blank questions in a blank room. The constant dripping that had worn away so many stones. You say here, do you still stand by? Is it not possible? You don't expect us to believe. Blank hours. Then I was left alone to take an inventory of an empty room. And after a while, the sergeant came back and sat down opposite me and looked at me and shook his head.
You're free to go now.
Great.
But don't go too far.
Look, I appreciate that you don't get many opportunities down here for sharpening up your interrogation.
Now, don't
technique.
Get smart, lad. Don't get smart.
All you had to do was wait until the girl came round.
Oh, I agree. I agree. The trouble is she didn't come round. She's dead. She died an hour after she was admitted to hospital.
I walked out of the police station into what should have been dawn, but was more like dusk. Men don't cry, my mother said to me across a gulf of years. Remember, men don't cry. And then she would put the blackthorn stick away in the corner until the next time. Away in the corner, as if nothing had really happened. Only another little death. Nothing to cry about. Wherever you look, it's happening. A child caught in a rocket blast. An innocent bystander, suddenly a hostage, whisked from daydream into nightmare. Another little death, another little death, another little death won't do us any harm. On the way back, a tune kept dancing insistently in my head. The tune Jenny had played. Young Girls in the Garden. Now there was only one. Then the long avenue again, and the house. And on the steps a pale glimmer. And I thought irrelevantly of white peacocks as Jenny came down the steps to the car.
Did you have a bad time, Talion?
Not good.
Come and tell me all about it.
I didn't tell her all about it, just most of it as we sat in the breakfast room drinking coffee as though it was just another everyday morning.
It all seemed so, I suppose simple is the word. She just opened her eyes for a moment. Then she shook her head, as though she was saying, oh, I don't want to know any more. It's too much, too difficult. So she closed her eyes and gave up.
Cardiac failure sounds better than frightened to death.
I haven't told the others yet.
Time enough.
What a little creep Simon was.
De mortuis.
I'm afraid I don't speak Latin, Talion.
Maybe you just speak it selectively.
There was nothing between Esther and Simon, in case your mind was running on those lines.
She was obviously involved with him in some way.
Has it ever occurred to you that this is a very small commune for such an enormous house?
It did, fleetingly.
There were about 30 people here at one time, most of them politicos. Does it ever occur to you that Marx must spend eternity turning in his grave?
I haven't been to Highgate recently.
Anyway, you know the scene. Dropouts who'd never been in, sitting around all day, talking about the revolution, while the women made endless cups of coffee, looked after the children, cooked the meals, and did the washing up.
Do they try to take over?
Well, they have to, haven't they? I mean, they feel they have some sort of commitment that way.
Obviously, they didn't win.
No. Jason and I decided we preferred to be bourgeois escapists, and threw them out.
What kind of rank did you pull on them?
Money. Jason and I subsidized this place.
Where does Jason get his money from?
My dear, that's a question well-bred people never ask.
How does all that tie in with Esther?
Well, of course, the whole thing was much, much nastier than I've made it sound. And I think it was a pretty traumatic experience for her.
I think you're right. She was very involved in the commune.
Anything that threatened the commune threatened her. She was a very insecure person in every way. I think Simon made use of that insecurity to make her do things she wouldn't have done normally.
He made use of Sarah, too.
No way. Sarah used him. Sarah's big love affairs with Sarah. She just expresses it through men. Like masturbating, only with someone to talk to.
You frighten me.
I don't think so.
Something does frighten me.
I think I know what you're going to say.
I'll say it anyway. Whoever killed Simon is still on the loose. And he's around here somewhere. For once, my accident of a room seemed almost welcoming. And I dropped down on the bed. And soon I slept like the dead. Like Simon. Like Esther. I woke up to find someone watching me. He was seated on the bed across the room. He was somewhere in his 50s, and his expression held a kind of haunted strength. He had a quality of stillness, and his left leg stuck out straight and unnatural. His voice was clear and quiet.
My name is Jason.
So you are real?
What did you think I was?
I'm not sure. A figment of a group imagination, perhaps.
We have things to talk about, I believe.
No lack of them, that's for sure.
I'll let you handle the agenda.
Let's start with a ghost.
Do we have one?
I should think this house is filled with them. But the one that interests me is the one your daughter Ginny saw. She said he was singing a Jesus song and ran away when he saw her.
Your brother Jonathan was always wandering round the house at all hours of the day and night.
Did Hardiker tell you then?
I don't think I've ever spoken to Hardiker in my life. The name set me wondering. Talion. Very unusual as a surname, but not too unusual a word in the phrase Talion law, which means simply an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It was fairly obvious, you know.
You could be right. Why would my brother run away from Ginny? Do us a favor and tell me who he is.
All in good time. Did you know that Simon was Hardiker's son?
No.
You pick up some interesting incidental information in the pornography business.
Hardiker and Son, a family firm.
Like you and Jonathan.
You're wrong there.
That accounts for the diary, of course.
I'm not with you.
I'm sorry, I thought you would have heard about that.
Well, tell me about it now.
Well, you see, when we started here, I had this idea of keeping a kind of group diary to be entered daily, so that everyone would be kept in the general picture, know what everyone else was up to, which people were here, and which people were away.
So?
One day we discovered that several pages had been torn out.
The children, perhaps?
Well, naturally, that's what everyone thought. But the children denied it. Then one day I realized something rather sinister.
How sinister?
Well, it so happened that all the missing pages mentioned that I was in London.
I'm not going to believe they also mentioned your pornographic interests.
It was worse than that. You see, by pure coincidence, it so happened that every time I was in London, there was a bombing.
Was it pure coincidence, Jason?
Oh, yes. I think Hardiker rather liked me in the role of master bomber, with Bolfin House as the center of operations and Bolt Hole all in one.
It was Simon who tore the pages out of the diary.
Who else?
Where are those pages now?
Destroyed.
By the man you were sheltering?
Right.
Who is he, Jason?
I thought you would have guessed by now.
His name, Jason.
Jonathan Taverner.
Jonathan is dead. I identified him.
You identified a wrist watch. Hugo Albert had borrowed the watch. When you made that mistaken identification, the organization played along with it. It made Jonathan that much more valuable. I mean, the police weren't going to look for someone who was dead.
I can't take your word for it.
Then you'll have to have proof.
I can think of no better proof than talking to Jonathan.
Nor can I.
The sooner the better.
As soon as I can arrange it. I'll be back in about half an hour.
Jason?
Yes?
What happened to your leg?
It's tin. I lost the real one in a Japanese prisoner of war camp.
He went limping off. A man with all his priorities sorted out. A man developing the virtues of a new society by pandering to the vices of the old. A man who understood the meaning of the dialectic. A man called Jason. But he had gone astray on one point. The Talion law. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But whose eye and whose tooth did I represent? The bomb that blew up Hugo Albert killed four children. The oldest was aged six. I thought about it a long time. And one day, thought was not enough, and I got a gun and came after the people behind that bomb. To hell with whatever truth they mouthed. For my truth was that no truth is worth a dead child. And if my brother rejected that, then he had to die. So I checked the gun and put it where I could get at it easily, and sat and thought of nothing till Jason appeared in the doorway.
He'll see you.
Now?
Now.
Tell me where and how to get there. I listened carefully as Jason spelled it out in detail. Then I left the room without a word, without a gesture. What was there that remained to say? Along the corridors, right angle after right angle after right angle, then across the hall, the children's toys still in their strange state of suspended animation. Through the door, down the steps where Ivor dreamed his dream ladies in their long dresses with leg of mutton sleeves, then the lawn, soft underfoot, spears of daffodils thrusting through, something stirring. The first shot tore my feet from under me, hurled my face into mud, filled the world with a prospect of pain. The second one drove me further down to somewhere I was going alone. Then there was another, far off, in another place, and someone screamed and ran and fell beside me, and his face looked startled and then empty. And I knew him from my childhood, and that his name was Jonathan. Then Hardecker bent over me, asking something, and I couldn't understand, and wept for my stupidity, and fell asleep. The hospital is quiet and orderly, good for making thoughts the same way. And I've been wondering who my brother thought he was shooting at when he saw me walk across the lawn. Who did Jason tell him I was? What threat did he invest me with? What hatred did he make me represent? I think Jason is a great man to have survived the Japanese camp. I think Jason is a great man to have taken Simon, Jonathan, and myself and made us all cancel each other out. For I'm certain now he set up Simon for Jonathan, then me for Jonathan, and finally Jonathan for Hardecker. I think Jason is a great man who loved the commune just as much as Esther, and in defense of it was ready to fight the world. The hospital is quiet and orderly, and perhaps I should be thinking of other things. I overheard the doctor tell the nurse today I had a 50-50 chance. That makes me feel a sense of privilege. A 50-50 chance. How many of us ever get odds anything as good as that?
This statement was recorded by Peter Taverner, alias Talion, in the Dunsfairn Hospital, Dunsfairn, in the presence of me, Salem Hardecker, Superintendent Special Branch. Peter Taverner, alias Talion, died at 2:28 a.m. on Saturday, 29th March, 1975. Cause of death, gunshot wounds.
That was Badger by Owlight by Edward Boyd. Peter Talion was played by Edward Judd. The rest of the cast was Esther, Diana Olson, Sarah, Anne Kristen, Hardecker, James Cairncross, Simon, Tony Robinson, David, Andrew McRobb, Jenny, Sarah Collier, Jason, Ian Stewart, Ivor, Michael McKenzie, Ginny, Nicola Ferguson-Smith, Police Constable, Crawford Logan. Technical presentation was by Michael Edwards and Tom Anderson. The production from our Glasgow studios was by Stuart Conn.
Badger by Owlite was first heard in 1975. Tonight's broadcast was by way of tribute to Edward Boyd, who died at the end of last year.